Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Today, Sonia, we are talking about the 46th episode of the X-Men Task Show, the 20th episode of Season 3, Nightcrawler. An episode about Nightcrawler.
Yeah, my favorite X-Man.
Is he your favorite blue X-Man?
Yes.
There's Beast, Mystique. Archangel is light blue. I'm sure there's many other blue ones. Apocalypse is kind of blue. Well, he's kind of gray-blue.
Yeah.
So
Nightcrawler is one of my, like, all-time favorites, though.
Yeah. I love Nightcrawler, too. He's awesome. So Nightcrawler, as you know, most of us know, he's a blue-skinned, demon-y-looking mutant with yellow eyeballs and fanged teeth and a tail, like a magical kind of tail that helps him do athletics. He's also got, like, weird, like,
he's only got three fingers.
Yeah, he's got claw fingers. Well, they're not claws so much, but they're just weird.
Well, he only has two regular fingers plus an opposable thumb on each hand, so.
Yeah, but they're kind of, like, big and monsterly looking.
Uh-huh.
And he also, although he covers them with tasteful white gloves, which is cool.
Uh-huh.
And then he's got, like, weird feet, too, similar. Like, he's sort of like, I think he's got, like, two toes in the front. Two big toes that are really poseable.
Yeah.
And like a back, like...
That are really opposable?
Yeah, opposable. And like a back,
I'm
like...
I'm not opposed to them.
Right, yeah. I don't know if he
it's
has...
almost like a bird claw configuration.
Yeah, there's something weird going on with the heel of his foot, too. So he's got, like, incredible, like... He's kind of like Beast in the sense that he could stick to walls. He doesn't really stick to them, but he could really clench into them, into the little surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes him a good climber.
Right, yeah.
He's just very agile.
He's super agile. He's like one of the most athletic mutants there is. Mm-hmm. And on top of all that, well, he's got two more powers that are interesting that I know of anyway. The first one is his face is in perpetual shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he goes into any shadow, he turns completely invisible except for his eyes. Which is a fun cartoon character ability to have.
Mm-hmm.
You see in those old cartoons. They even do it in The Simpsons when they're in the dark. You just see their eyeballs.
Yeah.
But for Nightcrawler, that's like his actual power. That he can turn into...
Disappears into the shadows.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And it's interesting in the comics. He doesn't discover that power until like somewhere in the middle of the Phoenix Saga run.
Hmm.
He doesn't even know he has it. He must have had it for years.
Mm-hmm.
But never... A bunch of leprechauns make it... They enlighten him as to that power, which is... Don't ask me to explain that.
Hmm.
And then his last power, most famously, I guess, is that he can teleport with his signature BAMF noise.
Mm-hmm.
Although in this cartoon, as we're going to see, it's not like quite as... It doesn't look like it does in the comics. In the comics, it's a lot more... I'd say it's a little more dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big plume of purple and black and yellow smoke. And it's supposed to smell, too. It's got a distinct smell.
Mm-hmm.
And... So that's kind of interesting. And here they show it as he, like, kind of turns, like, electric light blue, kind of like he's beaming somewhere, and there's a little bit of black smoke as he disappears.
Right.
And the noise isn't as pronounced as I think it should be, because they make a big deal about this BAMF in the comics. It's always drawn and
it's
very...
It's not subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever, it's fine. And another thing that not true to the comics is that he easily teleports with multiple people here. In the cartoon, and that they always do that in the movies too. Like they make it not a big deal for him to teleport with others.
Right.
In the comics, it actually brings him physical pain to try that.
Oh.
So he can do it, but it hurts him, and you know, it's something he gets real hesitant about when he has to save somebody.
Hmm.
Like, I think with one person, it's okay. The more people he has, the more painful it is for him.
Okay.
And then the last thing I'll say about Nightcrawler and his powers is that he. There's something going on. It's not that he's just teleporting from X to Y. He's, like, traveling through another dimension and, I don't know, like, some other weird, like...
He, like, creates a little wormhole for himself or
something? Yeah, it's like a magical dimension he enters briefly and then goes out the other side somewhere. Huh. And there's a whole backstory to that, too, which I don't really know much about.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Nightcrawler, even though he's a mutant and he's not, like, a magical demon, he is actually in the world of magical demons and things quite a bit in the comics.
It, like,
comes up a lot from his circus past.
Yeah.
Things of that nature.
I think it's interesting, like, in the movies when they, which we talked about, like, recently, they make... his teleportation device is very... It's like plumes of smoke.
Yeah, like blue smoke.
It looks cool in the movies, but in the comic... No, sorry. In the show, it doesn't seem like it's smoke, really. It's more like a flash of light.
Yeah. I mean, they show a little bit of smoke here in the cartoon, I noticed, but not like... Like I said, in the comics, I think always had it the best. I want to see that in the big screen one day.
Yeah.
That it's like a purpley, yellow, like black, sooted smoke.
I'm not complaining about it. I like all of the different iterations of it, but it's like interesting that there's so many interpretations.
Well, I'm complaining about it. I think the first interpretation was the correct one.
Moving on.
Yeah. So Nightcrawler, you know, is here finally. He's a character that we both wished was on the show from the start. He's great to me. Like more than a comic book character, he's a great cartoon character, or would be. He's just, you know, very fun and, like, looks great in a cartoon. I mean, he's hard to adapt to real life, you know, as we've seen. I think they've done an okay job with portraying him with whatever actors they've gotten, the two actors they got. Alan Cumming, I forget the new kid that plays him. But he's a little too ghastly, I think, in the movies, which might not be the fault of the movies. It just might be, like, how do you make a guy like Nightcrawler come to life?
Mm-hmm.
But I just love this Nightcrawler, which the cartoon takes from the comics almost exactly in look. It's like the classic, like, svelte Nightcrawler with the red and black outfit, like weird spandex outfit he wears, and the white gloves, and like the Mario gloves or the Mickey Mouse gloves, I guess, and the white shoe gloves, and that's just like the nice clean look of Nightcrawler. I love the classic Nightcrawler, and you know they've obviously changed him in the comics too over the years too, but that's another story. But anyway, I like seeing classic Nightcrawler. It brings warmth to my heart, And a nice thing that this show does, as we've remarked many times, is that they adapt comic book stories to their own ends in a summarized way. And they sort of update them a little bit, too, at least for the 90s they updated them. So that's what's going on here when we meet Nightcrawler at the start of the episode. He is being chased around in a European village called New Herzl. It's an isolated village somewhere on the border of France and Germany, or maybe France and Switzerland. They don't really say. We'll get into more of that later, but he's being chased around by an angry mob, and they're trying to kill him. And that's pretty much, like, what the Nightcrawler introduction in Giant Size X-Men was when he was created, I think, by Len Wein. And I think Len Wein created him. I could be wrong there. Someone correct me if I'm incorrect. But anyway, so that's, like, the introduction when Professor X finds him in the comic. He's being chased around by an angry mob, and Professor X uses his mind powers to, like, stupefy the mob and just rescue Nightcrawler. So it's a similar thing here, although Professor X is not in this episode, and Nightcrawler actually has to escape the mob for his dear life. It turns out he's hiding in a monastery with monks that have, like, hidden and protected him. As we'll see in this episode, one of the biggest themes is religion, and Nightcrawler is quite religious, which is true to the comic book character as well. So that's sort of the setup to this episode. You know, we see him, like, skulking around. We see him teleport. We see him do some athletics. And we see how much, like, racist villagers are afraid of Nightcrawler. I like that it's like a angry mob of old-timey European people, like, from the 1910s.
I thought that was so weird, actually, that they choose to draw them that way. Yeah. They have very old-fashioned clothes with, like, lacy collars coming out the top of their sweaters, and, like, you see the man with, like, he's got, like, a bowler hat and a monocle, and, like...
I mean, it's not so unbelievable. I mean, it's the hinterlands of Europe. You know, there's... Just like in America, there's places that are... Like, in California, there's real rednecky... farming towns that are not like
not
what you think of when you think,
like,
of California.
Yeah, that's true. But they're not wearing clothes from 100 years ago.
Yeah, but Europe's a little different. I don't know. They say it's an isolated village in the mountains. People, and it's also, this is the mid-90s, perhaps. They haven't quite, you know, there's still no internet really at this time. This town definitely wouldn't have it. Although, you know, there's some internet, but not, definitely this town wouldn't have it. You know what I mean? It's like, who even knows if they, what kind of TV they have? Like, maybe one black and white television in the town pub or something. Or maybe none at all. So, you know, time, I can almost buy it. But it is funny that the sheriff of the town has a laser gun that shoots red lasers at Nightcrawler. So
I just think it's, like, it's a whole funny thing, because it's, like, probably the artistic, like, choice to do that was to really place it in Europe.
Yeah.
Right? So that you get the idea of, like, where you are. But, like, at the same time, like, a lot of kids haven't been to Europe, so they get their ideas of what Europe looks like from watching shows like this. So it's this, like, perpetual motion machine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but little how you forget, we get other views of Europe in this very episode.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
We see a fancy ski lodge, and then they end up in Paris at the end. So.
Yeah, no, I don't mean anything bad by it. Just, no, like, it's, whatever. It's just a funny manifestation of that.
Yeah, it's the classic, like, Frankenstein village trope or Dracula tropes, you know, like these weird Transylvanian type old Europe places in the forests and mountains and things.
Yeah.
So it's a good setting for Nightcrawler. It seems like that's where such a figure would emerge from.
Mm-hmm.
And also, did we mention Nightcrawler's a German guy too?
Right.
Kurt Wagner.
Yes.
So anyway, Nightcrawler gets away, but cut to a fancy ski lodge in France somewhere, where Gambit and Rogue and Wolverine are all on vacation together, and they're not happy.
Yeah, they're not having a good time on vacation.
Yeah. For some reason, Gambit thought he was just going on a vacation with Rogue alone. Like, it was going to be
a romantic getaway.
Yeah, but then he's, like, really annoyed at Rogue that she brought Wolverine along as the chaperone, which raises a bunch of interesting questions. Like, clearly, Gambit and Rogue are adults. Gambit, probably older than Rogue. Rogue, let's say, we've always said, like, 21, 22, maybe on the high side, 22, on the low side, 19 in this show. I'm going to say 22.
Okay.
Gambit, like, who knows? I'd say, like, 27, 28 on this show. Maybe even older, maybe 29, 30.
All right.
But still an adult, and Rogue an adult. So why does Rogue need a chaperone? Is the question.
Well, she's the one that, like, planned this vacation, right? So I think it's that, like, you know, her and Gambit have been having this, like, romantic interlude that never goes anywhere for, like, several... It's been a theme throughout, like, all the seasons, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Gambit probably thinks, like, oh, we're gonna be an item or something, and Rogue keeps being like, but we can't because I'm gonna suck away all your mutant powers and incapacitate you.
So that's why she needs Wolverine to keep... Because Gambit can't control himself around Rogue.
I think, like, she...
So she wants a buffer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think she wants, like, extra company, and she was like, all right, it's all amongst friends, Logan, come along to this, like, ski vacation. Oh, you're Canadian, you can ski, you know?
Gambit not accustomed to being in the friend zone, first of all.
Right.
but his pursuit of Rogue just continues unabated. He can't help himself.
Yeah, well.
It's really funny. So he's, like, real salty about this trip. And he's, you know, drinking his coffee. Interestingly, heating up his coffee with his powers
cocoa,
in his hands.
Say.
Oh, is this cocoa?
Yeah.
So that it's funny that he's sort of... brazenly using his powers in the ski lodge. and Wolverine himself is really unhappy to be on this trip. He can't get any enjoyment. But he hears Taurus talking about local tales of a demon that's lurking about, which obviously is Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine's so bored of looking after Gambit and Rogue, he's like, oh, demons? Sounds like action to me. And he starts snooping around about it. And he convinces Rogue and Gambit to go on, like, a long-ass... like you know, 10-mile ski trek somewhere
to off-road,
this, like, intense, like, skiing thing. I guess it's dangerous because it's probably off the trails, and Rogue and Wolverine are doing fine, but Gambit cannot ski, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he's from the bayou. Yeah. They don't ski over there.
Yeah, we don't have skiing in the bayou.
I mean, fine, but, like, then why... I don't know, whatever. Rogue can ski fine for some reason, so...
Well, you know, Rogue is really strong, and also she can fly, so maybe any time that she's about to stumble,
she just flies a little bit.
Naturally levitates. Yeah. And Wolverine, as we know, well, first of all, he's from Canada, and as Rogue mentions a few times in this episode, and he's used to skiing, and he's also got, like, infinite endurance, too.
Right.
But it's funny to see Gambit, like, stumble around, but he has some funny lines. He says, Gambit's a natural athlete. And then right after he says that, he, like, falls down a hill again, and it's actually pretty violent and messed up because he crashes into a tree, and then after he crashes into a tree,
he's, like, holding on to it to steady himself.
But his mutant power gets the best of him, and he charges the tree up, and it explodes. So then he gets exploded by the tree, and then that causes an avalanche, which catches, like, all three of them.
Right.
And Rogue gets knocked out by the avalanche. Wolverine's the only one who is conscious, I guess because of his healing power. But it also makes you wonder, like, what is Rogue's tolerance for pain, even though she's super strong?
I mean, she comes to pretty quick.
Yeah,
she gets out of the snow. She, like, flies them away.
Right, yeah. But I also think it's like, it's weird to see like a cartoon episode in the mid-90s when this was made where they show a character get into, like, crash into a tree via skiing. Because that was, I don't know what the timelines are, but that was like a big problem in the 90s.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, lots of celebrities were dying by crashing into trees. Like,
while skiing.
Yeah, Sonny Bono, most famously, who was a representative in Congress at the time, you know, of Sonny and Cher fame.
Right.
And he died by crashing into a ski, and that was very tragic. This is when, like, these are, like, quaint tragedies, like, from the 90s. I feel like our tragedies now, in the modern age of 2018, when we're recording this, are much more violent and horrific.
Yeah.
You know, like, school shootings and, like, horrible terrorism and things. But in the 90s, there was, like, like, things like, you know, crashing into, like, rich people crashing into trees and dying was, like, a problem. And I'm sure people still do die crashing into trees, but... Yeah, I don't know. It was, like, a big deal. And also, like, I know, like, some of the Kennedy children, or, like, one of them died while, like, ski crashing, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of, like, famous, like, ski-related deaths around this time. So, to me, it's, like, it always stuck out as, like, oddly topical that they would show Gambit crashing into a tree. I wonder if they're trying to show children that skiing is, like, not safe. It's dangerous.
I thought they were making the point that, like, the X-Men are, like,
I mean,
approaching invincibility, you know, because it's like it's such a dangerous thing, and so many people die in this exact situation.
Well, we don't know how many people die, but
okay, yeah, maybe not so many, but whatever.
Well, right, in that situation, maybe a lot of people die when you hit a tree.
Yeah, but like the X-Men, you know, come out of it like relatively fine.
Yeah, I don't know what point you're trying to say. It's just
maybe there's no point.
Yeah,
maybe
I don't think there's a point. It's just weirdly like a coincidence or something. I just thought it was worth mentioning. So anyway. You know, Wolverine takes Rogue and Gambit, who are knocked out, to the nearby monastery where Nightcrawler is, apparently, although we haven't discovered that yet. And they're recovering, and, you know, Rogue comes to, and she meets these monks, and the monks are trying to help her, and, you know, they're a little... they're real... What's the word I'm looking for? Rogue's, like... Somehow in the accident, her...
Her sleeves get torn off.
Yeah, so she's, like... like, more sexy than she was, like, a minute ago with in her full ski outfit, which I thought was, like, a weird choice. I know, like, narratively they want her skin to be exposed later in the episode,
uh-huh.
But at the same time, is the idea that, like, oh, Rogue needs to be the sexy one at all times, so that's why she's, like, got some skin showing here? I don't know.
No,
I just thought it was weird.
So.
No, you don't think that? Yeah. You just think it's because a plot device?
Yeah.
Okay, you're probably right. Anyway, I think that's just kind of strange that she just happens to be... her clothes are torn in a kind of a sexy way. But, you know, the monks are like, oh, please, well, you're modest here. Put on this monk robe. So she has the monk robe. Although she later quickly discards it because she can't fly around in it easily.
Yeah.
So Rogue is meeting the monks. Gambit's kind of passed out still at this point. And, you know, Wolverine is also meeting the monks, and we're getting an idea of what this place is. They say their mission is to treat, you know, like, travelers and to help them with whatever, like, comforts they need. And they say they actually treat a lot of ski crash victims, which
is funny. Ski accident victims, yeah.
It's like, luckily that monster is there.
Well, that's what's going on in their neighborhood, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
I guess. And then... you know, the monks seem like nice guys for the most part. There's one secret monk that's skulking around that seems suspicious. Mm-hmm. Wolverine already sniffs him out because he's been spying. His name is Brother Reinhardt, and he's an asshole, basically. That's all we need to know about him for now. And then we sort of get, like, through these conversations with the monks that Wolverine's kind of anti-religion. He's sort of openly scoffing at them and their beliefs. And he's...
it's, like, not so much that he's, like, anti-religion. Well, maybe he is anti-religion, but it's, like, he's been... disillusioned, I think.
Yeah. He's had a long, hard life of pain and tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like a guy that, like, he, like we've discussed many times, he's like, how old is he? Like 150, 200 years old. Like something insane.
Yeah.
So he's had a longer life than most to think about, like, how God is cursing him. So he's not happy with God, let's say. And this is, like, this is the crux of the episode. It's very, in its own small way, a little bit controversial that a children's cartoon is tackling the subject of religion in a semi-serious manner.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's great. It's not in a way that's, like, overbearing or, like, oh, you should be Christian or you should be, like, believe in God. They present, like, many sides of the argument, as we'll see, and it's kind of refreshing in a way.
Yeah, it's, like, tastefully done, too.
Yeah, it still holds up. Like, a cartoon done in, like, 1994, 95, like, still very tasteful to watch in 2018.
Hmm.
With very, very respectful, very not, like, cynical and not, like treating the audience like stupid or too smart or something. So just they struck the right tone. Great episode. So that's my review so far. So anyway, like, so that's all going on, and then Gambit's attacked in his sleep by a guy who's like trying to poison him, and that I don't understand. So like, let's just cut to spoilers. It's Brother Reinhardt's trying to kill Gambit.
Right.
Is it like revealed why he's trying to kill Gambit?
I think he's going after all of them, and yeah. Gambit was just, like, the easiest target, so he right. went after him first. That's kind of what I assumed.
But why, though? Because I don't think it's revealed right away that they're mutants, that Wolverine and Rogue are mutants yet to these monks. So I'm not sure why he's trying to kill Gambit.
Huh.
And it almost seems that Wolverine would be on their side, because he wants to go demon hunting. And as we'll see in a short scene, he's ready to kill Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what Brother Reinhardt's motivation is for trying to kill Gambit. That's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just seems like a weird plot beat. But anyway, in after the midst of this attack, which Rogue walks in on, Brother Reinhardt throws like the poison cask at her, so she's coughing. And Wolverine catches wind of all this too, so he goes after who he thinks is the attacker, but it turns out it's Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
So Wolverine starts fighting Nightcrawler, and he thinks he's a demon, and Wolverine is violently slashing at him.
Yeah.
And Nightcrawler, because he's so athletic, he's easily able to dodge him. But it ends where Wolverine, like, stabs at Nightcrawler, and Nightcrawler teleports away at the last second. Wolverine's claws go into the monastery walls, and it's like, you were just gonna stab this guy in the heart and kill him.
Yeah. So it also doesn't make sense to me, because he's going after him because he's like, oh, it's a demon, because he believed what the townspeople were saying or whatever, but, like, once they saw him,
they'd have to know he's
this blue guy. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Why don't they just have a conversation of like, oh, hey, you're a mutant, not a demon. Like, what's going on?
You know? Well, they do have that conversation, and Wolverine backtracks a little, saying like, oh, I thought you were the one who'd attack Gambit.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't make sense anyway.
Because previously Wolverine was saying, you're a demon, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
So it's almost like the writers like kind of knew they had to like dig their way out. They just want to see Wolverine fight Nightcrawler.
Right.
You know, like, that's the point of that scene more than anything.
Yeah.
I
mean, it wouldn't make sense anyway, because Wolverine wasn't there when Gambit was attacked.
Yeah, he really wasn't.
Rogue was the only one who saw it, and she flew out right away, and she didn't have time to, like, stop and have a conversation with Wolverine about it.
Yeah.
Like, he appeared, so I don't know.
Just an excuse to have Wolverine fight a new character.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens anytime. You know, we're not going to get to it in this series, but when we do Spider-Man, wink, wink, Spider-Man fans, the Spider-Man animated TV show from the 90s also, we'll get to those X-Men episodes, and I'm pretty sure Wolverine has a fight with Spider-Man too when he meets him. I mean, like, and I'm sure it's happened on this show a million times too. I just can't recall in the moment. If a new good guy comes along, Wolverine, like, almost has to fight him.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it with Iceman too, but other X-Men were also fighting Iceman at the time. But, you know, it's just like, it's the classic Marvel thing. Let's see these good guys fight each other first before they either team up or realize it was all a mistake, and then they have to fight a bad guy.
Yep.
So they have a fight, but then Nightcrawler, like, explains, listen, I'm a really good guy. The monks vouch for him, and Nightcrawler gives his backstory. He says he was born, like, looking like Nightcrawler. He didn't turn into a demon in, like, age 12 or 13. When
like
mutants.
Beast or something, yeah.
Well, Beast is a result of a scientific
experiment. Yeah, right, but it's not like you.
Yeah. Right, so, so he was born like a demon baby, and it was quite shocking, and he was, like, his mother was cast out of her home, wherever that was, and it turns out his mother was Mystique, which is accurate to the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And accurate to, like, a kind of a cool logical thing that they did, whoever came up with that plot line in the comics originally, that Mystique, this blue-skinned, yellow-eyed woman, would also have a baby that would...
Yeah, blue-skinned, yellow-eyed baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also that, like, it also, it hints that they don't really ever talk about it in the cartoon, but Mystique, like Wolverine, has, like, a weird... I don't know about healing power, but her shape-shifting allows her to live a longer lifespan than most.
Mm-hmm.
So she can sort of... She like, regenerates in a way similar to Wolverine. She has a very long life.
Right. So the thing is, like, she was in some, like, German town when she had this baby, and she was masquerading as, like, a regular German woman. Why was that? Is there, like, a whole story around that?
There's probably a whole story in the comic. I have no idea what it is. You could tell us in the X-Men Task podcast Facebook group. Tell us the Mystique Nightcrawler backstory. It actually would be very interesting to read that. So bat signal out to Arthur or Adam or whoever knows the story. But my guess is, at least for the purposes of the cartoon...
Nightcrawler signal.
Yeah. My guess for the purposes of the cartoon is that Mystique, like, in one of her... Because she lives many lifetimes, essentially. Yeah. Like, she's probably masquerading as a rich woman.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
She's kind of like lay low and not get like mutant controversy around her.
Yeah, exactly. So she's pretending to be a glamorous rich woman, and she probably got involved with some like rich viscount or something, and they had sex, and she got pregnant, and then her secret was revealed finally when she had the baby.
Right.
So if I had to guess, that's probably what's going on, at least in the cartoon. I guess I don't know how true it is to the comic. But anyway, so, you know, Nightcrawler, and then he says, like, after that, I, like, joined a circus, a traveling circus, which is also true.
Well, he was picked up by gypsies.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. He's adapted by gypsies. And his whole gypsy extended family is a big thing in the comics, too.
Right. Like, the gypsies were the owners of the circus where he could feature prominently and be, like, loved and accepted as long as he was in the circus ring anyway.
Right. I mean, the gypsies accepted him as their son, but, like, the
society at large
did not. He was an outcast. And his name is Kurt Wagner, and that's where he got his, like, flamboyant outfit from, I guess. Mm. And, you know, and the gypsy side of his life in the comics is that's where all the magic comes into.
Right.
You know, because magic is real in the Marvel Universe, and, of course, gypsies. I guess, like, semi-racist in a weird way that they are adjacent to magic. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, like, weird racism on the edges of Marvel Universe because of the existence of, like, fantasy and magic. Like, for instance, lots of, like, weird stuff like that going on in Asia with, like, characters like the Mandarin and, like... I mean, it's just, like, you pick a region and Marvel, you know, they were pretty progressive. Stan Lee was fairly progressive. Jack Kirby, you know, whoever created the stuff at the time. So they thought they were being inclusive by having things like the Black Panther.
Right.
Which it is. It's a great idea. Like, he's an African prince from a fictional country. Where, you know, it's like a secret advanced, like, country. They've got secret technology, and they're actually really rich and wealthy. And that's, like, actually a really great empowering idea. But it's also, like, I mean, you know, I might get criticized for saying this. It's also still tinged with a bit of racism, in a way. Just because, just the conceit of it. I don't know. There's, like, just things like that. Like I said, there's characters like the... There's a character that represents a whole geographical region of people.
Right.
It's like, here you go, Marvel fans from Africa, here's a character that represents all of Africa.
Yeah.
And, like, he's great and everything. And I love Black Panther, and I actually love the comic, and I'm excited for the movie.
Right.
But, like, like I said, there's something...
The lack of diversity in African characters is in itself a stereotype.
Yeah, like. And it goes beyond that. I mean, it's like, because in some areas it's, like, not racist, but it's the same idea, like, with Thor. Thor is, first of all, like, there's not that many people, I guess, left that worship the Norwegian gods.
Right.
But if there were, it would be offensive to them to take a character like Thor, essentially a religious figure, and make him a comic book hero.
It's still different, though.
I know,
Norwegians,
right, yeah.
Historically...
Norwegians were never in much danger of being, like, oppressed from a racist cultural angle.
Right.
So that... But I'm saying, like, that's where it, like, gets fuzzy, where they're not, like, what the conceit of all these things are. And then, you know, I don't know. It's just, like, it's just... I always think about that in the back of my mind. I link about... Because, you know, also stuff like... They have the Greek gods, too, exist. I think maybe even both the Marvel and DC universe, there's Greek gods. And it's like, yeah, people really used to believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I mean...
I'm sure there are still a few people out there who do.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I heard some podcasts where they were talking about, like, why there's less... Why it's problematic to make mummy movies now. Because... I mean, essentially, you're, like, denigrating an entire culture's, like, way they, like, bury their dead and their religious practices, and you're just, like, you're presenting it in this, like, 1920s way where it's like, oh, these people were weird. No, gee golly, they're, like, monsters. Because it's, like, you know, like, racist white people from the late 19th, early 20th century were the ones discovering these tombs and like, trying to... piece together this history, and it was sold to the public at large as, like, wow, these wacky old Egyptians with their mummies, ooh, scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some bullshit. Like, in one hand, it seems kind of innocent, but on another hand, you can see it, like, with a more modern eye, being kind of not so culturally sensitive. And there's, like, other classic examples, too, like cowboys and Indians stories.
Yeah.
Like, that was super racist, but for years in America, that was totally accepted form of, like, polite family-friendly entertainment.
Right.
You know, where you're just depicting Indians either savages or the bad guys, or even if they're not the bad guys, there's the totally, like, weird racist portrayals of them, things of that nature. So, I don't even know what we're talking about now, but... Oh, gypsies, right. So, I'm saying, like, gypsies fall in that category, too, of, like, slightly... towards the mainstream public, it would have been less culturally insensitive to say, oh, gypsies have magic powers.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of like, wow, that's like weird.
Right. Now it's like there are people who are advocating for the Roma people.
And yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
bringing it back down to earth.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like it's, you know, but Marvel, I think they get a pass because they did things and they had good taste and they did things fairly progressively. And they give a lot of, like, real, like, depth to these characters and stories.
Well, I mean, in a way, they don't get a pass, you know, because there are, like, the Mandarin is never going to be put into, you know, a modern movie, X-Men movie, because, like, that's not culturally sensitive.
Well, not the Mandarin as we know from the comic. They did, like, a version of the Mandarin played by Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3, but it was a joke.
Right.
It was like, he's not really, he's an actor portraying some made-up character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. Right. So, in a way, they do, like, correct for these things going forward, but... But like I said, in the comics, these things still sort of remain in a weird way. Marvel finds a way to like tastefully update them, I believe. Like I don't know what I don't even know if they've written about the Mandarin in any recent Iron Man comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure if he exists, they probably made him like less of like the mustache twirling Asian stereotype that was like, you know, an analog for like American dislike of Vietnam at the time in the 60s. You know what I mean? Like that kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Interesting conversation to have in general about Marvel. All right. But back to this story. So that's Kurt Wagner's backstory. And it turns out to be really religious. Like, he found religion, and that's, like I said, true to the comic book character. You know, it's a big part of his comic book character that he's religious. But a thing that always struck me in the comics, Nightcrawler is also really fun-loving and really happy-go-lucky. And like I said in another episode, he's, you know, Wolverine's best friend, and they go drinking together. Like, he really likes beer. And he's also kind of, like, real dashing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Professor X in the comics gives him this hologram machine that lets him look like a human.
Mm-hmm.
And he always makes himself look like one of those, like, 1940s movie actors. The name's escaping me right now. Like, Fred Astaire or something.
Yeah.
You know? And he's real kind of romantic in a way, and just, like, out for adventure. So you don't really get much of that Nightcrawler in this cartoon, which is fine. We're just being introduced to him.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, there's a little bit more to him than just being like a devout religious guy.
Yeah.
But he is very Christian. And but Wolverine, you know, is really salty about this. He does not like Nightcrawler's religiosity.
Right. He's hanging out with monks all the time now. Well, in this episode,
right.
Wolverine, and he's just very skeptical about everything that they have to say and believe in.
Yeah, I mean, he has like a pretty powerful line. He says, "God gave up on us a long time ago."
Mm.
That's insane, and like very like accurate to the world of mutants that a character would say something like that. This is a credit to the show. I mean, this is really one of the best episodes, that they would go to a place like that, and it just makes the world richer and more real that a character would express a sentiment. You know, this is how he really feels about it. If you want to know, this is how Wolverine feels about God.
Yeah.
So, and also, like, weirdly, when Wolverine's saying all this, they cut to Gambit, and he's, like, nodding along. He totally agrees with Wolverine. So, and we'll get into that more later, but Gambit's views on the topic are also, like, quite interesting. But that's towards the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, but Ryan, even though the X-Men and the monks are, like, and Nightcrawler are, like, all becoming friends, there's the one monk, Reinhardt, is not happy about all this. He's super xenophobic and racist or whatever and bigoted. So he heads down to the village and convinces the villagers, let's attack the monastery, because it's impure, the demon's there, and he's corrupting everybody. I mean, they think that, they don't even really know about mutants, they just think that Nightcrawler is, like, a literal demon from hell. And Nightcrawler even says, like, who can blame them? I look like this, you know, it's not their fault. And then, I don't know, but, like, still Wolverine is arguing. There's another good line. There's a lot of good lines in this episode. Wolverine was arguing with Nightcrawler. He has another great revealing character moment. He says, I lived too long and done too much. And that's, like, in reference to him, like, turning away from God. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't, you know, he's lived such a long, horrible life that he just, like, he's beyond religion saving him.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to hear a bunch of mealy-mouthed words. From Nightcrawler to try to save his soul, to quote Sabretooth from an earlier episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then the angry mob's coming at the monastery. The X-Men are preparing. I'm kind of surprised that the X-Men think this is going to be a challenge. At one point, Rogue or Gambit says it's like, it's only 2 against 50 or so, you know, and how are we going to deal with that?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, you guys have amazing powers. They're right. a bunch of like weak
pitchfork wielding humans.
Yeah, with like crappy guns. You can yeah. easily deal with them. And they do.
Yeah.
You know, they fight with the villagers. A Rogue at one point, because of her arms are exposed in her like winter ski jacket, they touch her arms and she absorbs their like bad vibe, negative energy.
Yeah.
And she starts screaming about how, we got to stop the demon. We have to protect the village. Yeah. I'm so scared. And
they're coming after our families.
And she does one of her classic blood-curdling screams, which uh-huh. is really
super
great.
Super high-pitched.
Yeah, yep. It's amazing. And then the monster, it catches fire. And then Nightcrawler's fighting with Reinhardt. Nightcrawler wants to surrender himself, but Reinhardt wants to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Reinhardt falls off the edge of the monastery. Nightcrawler saves his life, and he flips the script on Reinhardt. He's like, look what you've done. Like, your hatred of me has caused this whole monastery to burn down. It's caused nothing but, like, destruction and madness.
Mm.
And then we see one of our classic X-Men animated moves. They show real fire superimposed on the animated fire.
Yeah, nice special effects.
To really emphasize to kids at home that, like, real fire is, like, really bad and dangerous and evil. And Reinhardt realizes, and that he has that moment of clarity. It's like, you're right. I've gone insane. You know, look where my hatred's taken me. So Nightcrawler does some good evangelizing in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they say their goodbyes at the village, where Wolverine thinks that they really screwed up colossally. He's like, look, the monster's burned down. Everyone's upset. Nightcrawler's like, no, like, no one died, no one's hurt, we'll rebuild the monastery, now we've, like, had peace and understanding in the village.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he saved Brother Reinhardt's soul. So, I don't think even, unless we missed it, I don't even think Nightcrawler gets an offer to join the X-Men, which is kind of a shame.
Yeah, well.
Normally they give Colossus or whoever, you know, here, why don't you join us? And
right.
He's like, no, I must stay, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, but it's still the same scenario where he has to stay and rebuild something that's been destroyed by the X-Men.
Right.
Like, with his Colossus, it's, like, the X-Mansion or, like, other things, like, rebuilding this village, you know. It's always some, like, excuse to not join,
mm-hmm.
usually involving construction work. And you noticed in this moment that, like, Gambit's kind of been knocked out again, and he's holding on to Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
What did you notice in this moment?
It just, the way it's drawn, it looks like Gambit's hand is touching Rogue's arm, like her bare skin of her arm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I
just a stupid detail.
Right. I paused the frame you were talking about. It's close. It's hard to say. The collar, the cuff sleeve of his jacket might be blocking her, his hand.
No, they're totally touching.
Well, I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think they got away with it. I don't think it's so obvious as you were saying at the time.
Okay.
But you're right. That might let us know what you think, fans. We're Gambit
if you
and Rogue.
Watched along,
yeah.
Just...
We're Gambit and Rogue skin to skin contact touching there. And then the X-Men, you know, Gambit kind of gets his way in the end, and it's kind of fair because he's been beat up a lot in this episode. They go to Paris,
mm-hmm.
and he's happy to be back in civilization. He's on a date with Rogue.
I mean, it's funny that he like talks about it like back in civilization. It's like you were just in some like fancy German village town. That is. Definitely civilization.
No, that was a totally backwoods, backwater.
That is like the place where the printing press was invented.
No, like, give me a break. I know he's in like a backwoods, like hinterlands town. Now he's in Paris, where he can go. And
he wants to be a cosmopolitan.
Yeah, he can have his baguettes and read Le Monde or whatever, and
yeah.
and be around French-speaking people, which excites him, obviously.
Right. Okay.
And he's on a date with Rogue, and this is where we get Gambit's religious views, which are quite shocking that a cartoon character would express this on a kid's show. He says, "We're all on our own in this world. Life is random," and that kind of makes Rogue very upset to hear that those words.
Yeah.
Words that some might say are completely 100% accurate. and it's just delivered so coldly and harshly by Gambit. But I guess the atheist viewpoint dutifully expressed in the show amongst the characters.
Uh-huh.
So Rogue, but, you know, Rogue's unsettled by this. So she was walking around and she stumbles across a cathedral or a church. And she walks in on Wolverine praying. Nightcrawler gave him a Bible and some Bible passages to study. So Wolverine's praying to God, asking for forgiveness or whatever, and a smile's on his face, and Rogue catches all this, and it causes her to cry as she sees it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe like on one end you have Gambit, who's totally you know, an atheist or whatever, agnostic.
And I know, but he's so, like, happy-go-lucky about it. Yeah, he's got, like, his shrimp cocktail and his strawberry ice cream. Well, should, and he's like, life is random.
Should atheists and should atheists and agnostics not be happy?
I'm not saying that. I just think it's, like,
strawberry ice cream.
The whole, like, attitude is in contrast to, you know, like, his religious views are in contrast with Wolverine, but then also it's like, there he is, like, you know, whatever, like, having a very carefree afternoon, and Wolverine is really ruminating.
Well, they, serious. I think, honestly, the show's being fair. They're showing that you could not believe in religion, you could have doubts about it like Rogue, mm-hmm. she's kind of in the middle, and then you can have Wolverine, who is, like, rediscovering his faith.
Right.
So I think that's, like, a real credit to the show, and a really, like, tasteful, as you said, mm-hmm. episode.
Yeah.
With a lot to chew on. You know, like I said, very good. I don't want to, like, dive too much into, like, religious belief. I don't think that's this is an appropriate forum to discuss our religious beliefs. Should we even have them or not? We'll leave it a mystery.
All right.
Like the way I danced around that topic.
Great.
But like I said, just a very good episode. We're nearing the end of season 3 here. The last one we have is it's Weapon X Lies in Videotape, I think it's called. I believe it's called that. Let me double check. Let's see. It's right here. Yeah, Weapon X Lies in Videotape. That seems to be the conclusion of season 3. So now the counting of episodes is like up to question, because sadly Hulu lost the rights to air the show, and Hulu had like a really like fan friendly. Reorganized take on what episode goes where.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have the previously on X-Men book sitting on my counter that actually has the proper episode order too. I'm just like, it's on my counter, so I don't want to grab it right down in the middle of recording. But my point is, like, we've played fast and loose with the airing of what episode goes where, and now we're going off our own private, like, collection of downloads, which is organized in the way that episodes originally aired on television, which is all out of order.
Right.
So it may not even make sense for us to even keep counting these things. But we are nearing the end of season 3, and, you know, this is like peak X-Men greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And dare I say season 4 continues the trend of very much goodness, but it will start to slide in, I don't know about if quality is the right word, but certainly it'll slide in an overall entertainment value, perhaps. But we'll see as we carry this journey forward.
Mm-hmm.
Sonia, any last words about Nightcrawler or this episode that you'd like to share?
It was a very good episode. Uh-huh. I really enjoyed seeing our old buddy Nightcrawler.
Yep.
I just learned that Nightcrawler is the name of a worm.
Ugh.
I'm guessing because literally it crawls around in the night.
Yeah.
Just like our mutant friend Nightcrawler does.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's my closing factoid for you.
Very interesting. I would just hope that, you know, with Disney buying back the rights to X-Men, that when they do a new animated show, which I'm sure they'll do, that Nightcrawler is included in the main cast.
Mm.
My other hope is they're not a bunch of wimpy teenagers. They are adults like they were in the show, too, because that's way more interesting. I need to see Nightcrawler drinking beer on a regular basis with Wolverine, mm-hmm. singing German beer drinking songs.
Great.
In a bar. That would be exciting.
Let's hope.
Let's bridge the bridge between Canada and Germany.
Bridge that bridge.
The cultural bridge between Canada and Germany can only be bridged with Wolverine and Nightcrawler.
Bridges.
Anyways, yes, bridges. So that's all I got for this episode. I'd like to remind the folks to please rate us 5 stars on iTunes, leave a review. That goes a long way towards spreading our popularity of the show in our awareness. Follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. That's always nice. And most importantly, join the X-Men Task Facebook group where you can interact with me and Sonia and all the other fans who have been really great and wonderful as we trek along here with the X-Men TAS television show. I'm a little sad to be ending season 3, but excited to see what season 4 has in store with us going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sonia, do you have any last final words to say on this cold February morning?
That's it.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Auf Wiedersehen.